Welcome to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt. Our host, Kenyatta Uzel, founder and CEO of PolyHire, talks with business leaders about what has elevated their careers. PolyHire has a long-standing track record of successfully recruiting top professionals to enhance the quality of life for all citizens, constituents, and customers. Kenyatta's Talent Hunt does a deep dive into how candidates reach the top of the selection process, examining everything from their education and backgrounds to their work experience and personal style. Kenyatta's guests share key and compelling aspects of their career climbs and give listeners an intimate peek behind the curtain of what it takes to create a leader. Kenyatta's Talent Hunt starts now.
Welcome to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt. I'm your host, Kenyatta Uzel, and I'm honored to be your host for another compelling conversation with a fascinating guest from the world of public service. Our guest today is Fairfax County, Virginia's Fire Chief John Butler. John Butler is a fire chief of Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department, and as you will hear, he is a paramedic and holds many other certifications, a testament to his belief to always be learning. Chief Butler serves as the president and board chair of IAFC, which is the International Association of Fire Chiefs. He also holds the titles of Chief Fire Officer, Chief EMS Officer, and many other chiefs. He is the Fire Chief of Fire Chiefs. I've known Chief Butler a long time and been a long time admirer of his life, his story, his success, and his character. Welcome, Chief Butler, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kenyatta. It's an honor. It's been a while since I saw you, but we do communicate. It's great to see your face and be here with you all today.
Thank you. Hey, Chief, you've opened many doors for many people, and I'm looking forward to hearing about, you know, how your trajectory and has served others. But also want to talk about the doors that were open to you and how that happened, including your journey to the States.
Well, yeah, I'll start where you ended just now. I'm an immigrant. I was born in another country, a small country on the west coast of Africa called Liberia. Grew up, you know, middle class, happy, healthy, with a great family unit. We took care of each other and had a good life. And there came a day in April of 1980, where the government was overthrown and there was a new regime put in place. And things changed. Things changed for us. And we had to leave under austere conditions. In fact, that day was so tense, my dad had told us bad things had happened in the country and we should be prepared that, you know, we could get in trouble with the new rebel group that had taken over the country. Well, sure enough, a few hours after the said coup, I mean, I was only 12 years old. All of this was so overwhelming. It was so overwhelming for a 12-year-old, and I was the oldest. So you can imagine my younger siblings. So long story short, a Jeep comes around the corner. They're shooting in the air. It's very loud and violent. You know, this is the first form of violence I'd seen in my life, of an intense environment. And my dad said, "No, boys, this is it. We're going to have to protect this house. We're going to have to protect your mom and your sister. No police are coming. The military's not coming. Things are bad." And, you know, we all were given weapons to take care of the family and the house. And about halfway down this serpentine road, we had a big house, a really big house. My mom and dad had done well and had this really beautiful house with a dedicated road. Well, down this dedicated road comes a Jeep, kind of the Jeep you would see in MASH, like the TV show MASH, an old school, you know, the old style World War II career war Jeeps. And sure enough, there are two guys in the front, two in the back, and one standing up, and he's shooting in the air. And halfway down the road, my dad said, "Hold on, everybody, just relax, relax. It's your uncle. It's Uncle Richard." And it was my father's brother who had brought these gentlemen who were friendlies. They were there to protect us and take care, you know, to make sure we were taken care of and to be able to get out of the country. And shortly thereafter, we were able to get on one of the last Pan Am flights out of Liberia for a while. So that was my literal and figurative landing at JFK, New York City. First time seeing the Statue of Liberty and World Trade Center, and just landing in the U.S., still in, in our tropical clothes, if you will, and it was cold. It was April.
Well, look at you now. That was an amazing, amazing journey and story to where you are right now, serving in the capacity in one of the largest counties in the country, one of the wealthiest counties in the country, diverse counties in the country, and you are their fire chief. Talk a little bit about how you came into the fire service. What made you say, I want to be a firefighter? I know many kids, you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And their first response is a fireman or a policeman. And I know that your thoughts on that word fireman. And I think you can talk a little bit about fireman versus firefighter as we move through this. But talk a little bit about how you ended up in a service of protecting and serving in the capacity of a fire officer.
Yeah. So I was one of the kids growing up that didn't want to have anything to do with being a firefighter. Not that I was opposed to it. It just was something that had never crossed my radar or my brother's and my family's radar. We didn't know any firefighters. We didn't know anyone in that industry. After the experience on how I immigrated to the U.S., I went to a school, and after graduating high school, I joined the Marine Corps along with my two younger brothers. I joined the Marines, and while in the Marines, I had the opportunity to work in Quantico, Virginia, not far from here. Well, Quantico, Virginia and Maryland and Columbia, Maryland, where my family had settled, were kind of close. And on the weekends and for holiday, I would go up to Columbia, Maryland. And that's where I learned from a friend that the fire department was hiring. Well, I accompanied him to the headquarters, to the fire department. And with him, I took the test and had the opportunity to be offered a job. For the first time in my adult life, I thought, well, gosh, there's something other than the Marine Corps out there. I was a diehard Marine. I was going to be a Marine till I was 99 and a half years old. I was never leaving the Corps. It was great for me and vice versa. We got along really well. And then here comes this opportunity. But it was always a Marine. And right or wrong, good or bad, that's how I am. And that's how we're wired. So for the first time, I had eyes to something else, and it had some similarities in values, the value system of the military and public safety. I saw some things that I associated with, and it's, you know, care for others, selfless service, service for a greater good, for a bigger calling. You're not going to get rich. I'm not going to get wealthy doing this work, but it'll be very meaningful and all of those good things. So it was kind of attractive. And once I got into it, I realized everyone in the room knew more than I did. And that right there was the octane that I said, well, I can't have that. So I just kind of immersed myself in the profession and the books, the training. And I always felt like I had to catch up because I was coming into the game a little later than my colleagues. So that helped. That helped me catch up.
Sure, sure. Look. You know, being raised by parents, you mentioned your parents and doing really well, and your brothers and uncle, that tight family unit. Being raised by parents your parents were civic minded. I believe your mother may have served in the Peace Corps.
Yes, my mom worked with the Peace Corps. Yep, sure did.
It's obvious family values and a life of service were part of the fabric of your upbringing. How did it translate to your approach to what you're doing right now? I mean, you mentioned all of those values that you embraced and you saw. What you're doing right now in the leadership and those that you're mentoring, talk a little bit about that and how that upbringing is, led you to where you are right now.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a real good question. There are some commonalities down the middle of my life that seems to be a recurring theme, and that is protecting this house, like I mentioned before, or protecting the family. You know, there's the first family and the second family, and the first family is the one we go home to, is our spouses, our children, or any combination thereof. And then there's a second family, and that's those who we work with. In fact, in the fire service, we call them the family. You know, the firehouse is kind of set up as a family environment in most cases. So those things are continuous. as a Marine who served in combat a number of times, we didn't fight for the flag. We didn't fight for Uncle Sam. We fought for the man or the woman to the left and the man or the woman to the right. And that's who we were willing to go downrange with. And that's consistent with the fire service and that family I talk about. So all those things just completed me.
For sure. You know, that's something that one of our previous guests, General Ward, mentioned, improving the foxhole. And it sounds like you've taken that to heart, and that's been part of what you are and why you do what you do, and you do it so well with those that you lead and serve beside.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what your family said when you told them that, you know, number one, when you were going to join the military, kind of backing up, what did they say? That was something that may have caught them off guard. And you weren't the only one in your family who went that route. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my two other brothers, they're 1 year. We're real close in age, a number of months. Our parents, the three of us, grew up as best friends and also Irish triplets, if you may. So we ended up, we're all in college together. We're at a small community college, Aidensville Community College in Baltimore County, Maryland. And we decided one day, like, hey, let's give mom and dad a break. Let's cut them some slack. They're struggling to make ends meet. The three of us are real close in age. They are paying for three college tuitions at the same time while they're all had two or three jobs at a time. So I think it was my idea. I'm not so sure, but we decided, hey, we see on TV that the military will pay for your college. How about we go down to this recruiter on Main Street in Cadenceville, Maryland, and sign up and join the Air Force? Well, we went to see the Air Force recruiter, and he was out of the office, but there was an old gunnery sergeant sitting in the Marine Corps office. And, you know, we got to talking, and long story short, the three of us signed up, and my parents didn't take well to that. They didn't take well to it at first. And they came around. In fact, my parents had to sign for my other two brothers because they were younger than 18 years old. So we certainly needed their blessing. Well, we all went to boot camp in Paris Island together, and we went to infantry school together. And then we actually served in combat together, my two brothers and I.
So that's also an interesting story. You know, we talk about teamwork, which is part of what makes leaders great, being able to engage a team and motivate a team, but truly embracing that friendship, that camaraderie. Talk a little bit about your service together. There's an interesting story that I've heard, and I've heard you tell about the three of you, and you served, I believe, two combat tours, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. But tell us a little bit about that story. I think our listeners will be excited to hear that, or be interested to hear that. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm full of stories. While we're in the Marines and while we're serving in the Gulf in the Iraqi theater in the early 90s, 91, during one of our tours in the Gulf, a Baltimore City media outlet had done a story about these three brothers who were serving in Iraq, and they interviewed my parents. My mom and dad, that was part of the story. This story made it back to the Pentagon, and that made it back to Saudi Arabia and Iraq. And there came a time where the Hummer showed up and got me and my brothers, and we all got together with the general who was in charge of that part of the theater. And oh gosh, he was so annoyed that he had been embarrassed. Like, how come we hadn't told him that, you know, we were all serving together? He had to get it from the Pentagon and downhill, you know what they say about how things roll downhill. And he was pretty upset with us. He said, one of you got to figure out who's going home, because now I'm told the three of you can't be here. So someone's going to have to go home. I'll leave you three alone. You guys figure it out. And he left us in a tent, you know, and we were so happy to see each other because we hadn't seen each other for months. We were all, although we're in the same theater, we're miles apart. So we kind of socialized and hung out. And anyway, so we decided, I said one of the brothers should go. The other said the other one should go. The third one said this one should go. So we finally asked the general, do we have to make this decision? And he said, no, you don't have to make this decision. I just have to make sure I offer you the ability for someone to go home. So, of course, the three of us decided no one's going home because we were going to stick together. That's what you do. you know, my dad used to say often when we were growing up and going out to clubs and hanging out like young men, young adult men, he always used to say, if one of you don't come home, none of you better come home. Now, I don't think he meant it literally, but the message was loud and clear. You know, if one of you don't come home, none of you come home. And that played in our heads like, oh, well, I'm not going home. I'll get my butt kicked by dad if I left you here. Yeah. So we serve together. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see that. And we see that when we look at the fire service, particularly where you've been, some of the best run fire departments in the country, from Howard County there in Maryland to where you are in Fairfax County now. How does your childhood, your family, how do you use that when you're leading your team of professionals who protect and serve us in the community every day? Talk a little bit about how all of that has carried over to the teams you're currently leading and have led.
Yes, good question. So I've said a lot about a lot of things. One thing that's to the core of a lot of what I've said is a values system. Okay, the core values of integrity, the core values of professional excellence, knowing your job, knowing what you're supposed to do, the core value of leadership and shared teamwork and shared leadership. There are six core values that I speak on every day here, even when I was in Howard County, Maryland, but here for certain, you know, community engagement, integrity, professional excellence, teamwork, shared leadership. All the stories, all the decisions, I tie them back. I have to tie them back to make them relevant. You know, regardless of if you're mopping the floor in a firehouse to doing a complex technical rescue, those core values play out, and there are veins of it in most of my professional stories. As I tell them, you know, it's that's what it's all about.
Sure. Well, look, all of these moments have led to your being a remarkable leader who continues to guide, mentor, and inspire others. We're going to pause for a moment, and when we return, want to hear more about your amazing journey, including how it all started with the opening of an elevator door.
You are listening to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt, where business leaders share their experiences and lessons learned in their personal and professional journeys. Now back to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt.
Welcome back. I'm grateful to you for choosing to spend a little time listening to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt. I'm Kenyatta Azell, your host and founder of PolyHire. At PolyHire, we're all about elevating and guiding people on the next steps along their career paths. Sometimes, as we know, we follow a path that's not as we had planned, and it all begins with what appears to be a random act. My esteemed guest today is Fairfax County, Virginia's Fire Chief John Butler. Chief Butler, over the years, has climbed through the ranks as a team member, a leader, and a guide to many. Chief Butler, you have quite a story to tell about how the firefighter part of your life began. Please share that with us.
Yeah. So in previous parts of this conversation, I talked a lot about the military experiences and how I was able to build on those foundations. And I also talked about, you know, being at the Marine Corps base that was close to home. And there came a time where my friend, a buddy of mine who had actually served with me in the military, came by the house and said, "Hey, I need a favor. My car is broken. My car is not working right. Could you do me a favor and give me a ride to the fire department headquarters so I can take the written test?" And I said, "Sure. You know, I'm on vacation." I think I was on a month-long vacation. I said, "Sure. I've got nothing else to do, nothing better to do. I'll come and hang out with you." So we go to the fire department headquarters in Howard County, Maryland. And I told him, I said, "All right, well, go ahead and do your thing." It was January and it was cold, obviously. So I said, "I'll hang out in the lobby as opposed to sitting in the car." And I was in the lobby. He went upstairs to do whatever he was going to do upstairs. And a gentleman walked by. I didn't pay a lot of attention to him. He was in uniform. And he walked by me and then kind of stopped. He was in fire department uniform. And he stopped and he turned and he said, "Hey, are you going to go upstairs? We're about to start the test. The test is about to start. You better hurry up and get up there." And I said, "I'm sorry, sir. With all due respect, I'm not here to take a test. I'm just here as a ride. I'm giving my friend a ride. I'm the chauffeur. I think I made a joke or two." And he says, "Okay, fine. Suit yourself." And he went on and he walked over to the elevator and I don't know if he pushed the button or was about to push the button. And he stopped and turned around to me and said, "Well, your buddy's going to be up there for 3 hours to take this test. Why don't you come upstairs and take the test alongside him? See how you would do. You don't have to commit to anything. Just take the test. See how it goes. You know, for the first time I said, well, that beats sitting in this lobby, you know, is 1991, 92. So looking at magazines, there were no cell phones or other things to doodle with. I said, sure, I'll go upstairs. I said, yes, I'll go upstairs. I'll take this test. And the elevator door opened and he and I got on the elevator and I went upstairs and walked into a room with probably 100 people all sitting at desks, all spaced out. And I took this test. Long test. It was almost about 3 hours long. And long story short, I passed the test. My good buddy, my good friend, he didn't pass the test. And that made for a very awkward ride home. But I took the test. And then from there, I went to another step in the process and another step in the process. And ultimately, I went back to Quantico and had to have a conversation with my commanding officer and said, I think for the first time in my life, I'm going to leave the Marine Corps to do something that seems just as challenging, interesting, meaningful, and all those words. And I joined the fire department, stayed in the Marines. I stayed in the Marines for 15 years after that in the reserves. But just saying, yeah, sure, I'll give it a shot. I'll go upstairs. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what happens up there. Well, you know, when those doors open and when I went in, everything else, I've been on that ride now for 30 plus years.
Wow. Well, excellent. Excellent. What a compelling story. Look, while you were in the academy, kind of fast forwarding here to now, you've transitioned out and you're in the academy.
Yes.
Realize that your classmates had a more knowledge and previous interest in becoming a firefighter. That forced you into a position of needing to soak up everything around you a lot, learn every nook and cranny of the firefighting business. Share a little bit about your passion for embracing that continuous learning. You speak of curiosity. Door opening, that elevator. Speak a little bit about that, because there are young professionals listening right now who aren't sure about their own direction. What can you tell them based on your experience?
Well, you know, there's a saying, what got you here won't get you there. And I had been selected. I had been selected to be in this academy class of probably a dozen, 12 to 15 of us comprised of this recruit class. And 1,000 people had tried out for the job. So I knew, you know, I made it through one door, but that wasn't going to be what I needed to be successful. And I did feel like everyone in the room had some volunteer firefighter time or some other experiences in the former department. And I felt, not only felt, I think it was actual that I was somewhat behind the learning curve. And that wasn't a place I felt comfortable being. I'd never been in that space of playing catch up or not knowing enough. I'm not super competitive. I'm not an athletic level competitive, but I'm also one that holds myself and others in high regard with thought and intellect. So I immersed, I committed to that profession and I'm going to learn it. I'm going to soak it up, insatiable for information in class, before class, after class. I was a married man with children and I still had to take care of my young family. And they were really young, 1 year old, 2 year olds at the time. But, you know, I'd burn the candle at night. It was important to me that I caught up. And did I ever catch up? I'm not sure. But certainly keeping up was the way to go.
Well, you'd absolutely thoroughly immerse yourself in every aspect of your trade to the point that, you know, in Howard County, serving in every role within that fire and emergency management system. I don't know that many people do that. I know you were the first. I don't know if you're the only, but you were the first to do that, I believe, in Howard County.
Yeah, I think it's still that way. Let's go back to sitting in the lobby and saying yes. That vignette, that experience is exactly why I was able to go through all the ranks. Because every time a position came up or something I hadn't done before or something that people weren't flocking to do when it wasn't the cool job, I'd say, yeah, let me give that a try. Why isn't it the cool job? What makes it not the cool thing? Why is it not the cool station to work at or the assignment? So that same yes, that yes of curiosity carried through. And, you know, sometimes I joke when I talk to people, I said, well, the only reason I became a fire chief is because I always said yes. The only reason I became a fire chief because there was nothing too dirty, you know, undesirable, too hard to learn, too easy to do. I mean, any of these superlatives, there was nothing that was going to stop me from embracing the conditions to learn from them, you know, to learn from this. I remember going to a fire station, being assigned to a station that many people would run the other direction from. And it was a slow station in a part of town that nobody wanted to be at. And I think that one of the very few times I asked for a transfer to that station, because I figured, I said, well, it's undesirable. It doesn't run a lot of calls, but I'll be able to finish college there, because I'll be able to sit in the study room and do schoolwork. And so even that, I found the good in it, and the ability to go to school and get my work done before going home and playing dad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is such valuable nuggets that you're sharing with us. You know, tell others who are, you know, looking to move up in their respective career ladders, why knowing and learning about all aspects helps you be better, a stronger employer.
Yes, yes. You know, again, we talked about the sponge and just taking it in. You know, you learn just as much from all the great things that happen in your life, just as you do from the things that didn't go so well. But having that mentality to learn. And also, let's not sleep on what you bring. We've talked about a lot of, you know, what you gain from certain employments and experiences. But don't forget about what you bring, your volunteer activities, you know, other jobs. There's a lot of the military I took to the fire service and still carry out today. Other training workshops, other big ideas that you sold to others, you know, content you created on other jobs. You know, I've had this continuum. You know, there isn't a break between the military and the fire service for me. It's been a continuum of experiences, you know, cross agency role confusion that you sorted out. Just think about all the great things you've done already, even in your short time in the workforce. You know, employers want to know about it. They want to hear about it.
One of the things that I always find very important when I look at trajectory and individuals who've ascended to a place of leadership, some of the most senior leadership, is the commonality is they all have a mentor or a guide or someone that helped them prepare to get there. Talk about you and who that may have been, who you look to as a leader or a mentor, as a guide, and how you play that forward in what you do today.
Yeah. So my parents were probably like many of us, our parents were our first mentors. And then I had thought partners, which are not mentors, mentees, but I talked to my two brothers who were close in age as thought partners. And I've had a slew of thought partners where the roles kind of balanced. You couldn't tell who was teaching who was preaching to whom. You know, it just kind of goes back and forth. There's a place for that, you know, number of military members, as well as in the fire service, clergy. No one man reads from one book. No person reads from one book. So various parts of my life I've pulled from different people, you know, and they've helped with that. And that goes the other way around as well. You know, there is a nuanced difference between mentor, mentee, and coach. Sometimes I just need a cheerleader. Just be in my corner. Even if you don't have any sage advice, just pump me up, you know, and we do that. We should do that for each other. You know, sometimes, I mean, if I had an astronaut friend, I'm not sure how much I have to provide that person. But sometimes just as a pom-pom carrier, just I'm here for you. I'm, you know, and you mentioned a team, you know, building a posse. That I say that to many people that I talk to and advise, your strength is that posse around you. I have had 14 people who have been my number twos, and their selection has been so intentional and so specific and so needed. And I mean, these are people who have proven themselves in a space of loyalty and trust and knowledge and how they treat other people. Because if we're going to be in the same posse, you got to model the behavior that you see me doing, or vice versa. You know, we're going to have the same, you know, values system. So, you know, even this organization that's had over 2,000 people in the Fairfax County Fire Department, I can't run this place by myself. I need that posse. I need the posse that thinks like me, acts like me, not necessarily literally, but from a values perspective.
Great, great. What advice would you give young John, little you? What advice would you have now for your younger self? And what would you tell young people who are working to start out in their own careers and grow in their own careers?
Yeah. So the tactical, I would say, pay attention to your finances, invest early, do the money thing right. Do it early, because it seems like just the other day I was in the academy and now I'm at the point like, oh, wow, I'm going to start landing this plane soon. I'm closer to the end of this profession than I was. But yeah, this just feels like the other day I started the academy. So investing and saving and treating, you know, your finances seriously early is one. Then your body, your mind, your health, your resilience. We didn't take care of ourselves in many ways, both as firefighters and just in life. You know, we didn't manage sleep hygiene. We didn't manage the mental health, the compounding of cumulative stress and what it did to our mental health and our bodies and carcinogen exposure and cardiac. So going back to your question, I don't want to get too much on a tangent, but I would say take care of your resilience, your health resilience. And lastly, we've said it a number of times here, that family, that first family, that ladder, some people like me and you and others who are so ambitious and driven, we got to like look back every now and then and pull that first family. You know, without that first family, nothing matters, you know, nothing matters. And there've been times in my career, we didn't do that so well.
Right. I agree. This is good. Good information. Good nuggets again that you're sharing. What are the hurdles? Some of the hurdles, I know there have been many, but some of the hurdles you've had to clear. And if you can share with others those first steps, stepping out, and how different the outcome would have been if you hadn't taken that first step.
One hurdle that I think a lot of people, including myself, especially when you end up in leadership roles, we seem to think you walk into the boardroom or the fire station or wherever you call the workspace, and if you're the boss, you feel like, I have to fix this. Whatever this is, whatever the issue is, you know, we come in thinking it's ours to fix and speak. And what I'm getting to is listen to understand before speaking to be understood. You know, like slow down, learn to listen. I slow down when I say that, because every word I'm saying is very intentional. You know, how many times we hear, oh, yeah, I'm listening. But are you really listening? You know, and leaders need to, we just feel, at least I did, I just feel, oh my gosh, the anxiety. I got to go in here and I'm the boss. I'm the CEO. I'm the chief. I got to go fix this. And I think with some maturity, I'm like, well, I'm not sure I have a solution yet. I need to hear more. I need to learn more. You know, I need to hear from you all. And just making this a shared solution to complex issues, that's a hurdle. That was a personal hurdle to kind of bringing myself back on my heels a little bit and including others in the solutions.
I like that. You've enlightened and inspired a lot of us today. And, I know you've barely scratched the surface when it comes to talking about your career, your accomplishments, and all that you've done. People are looking to make career moves and companies are looking for top quality candidates, and you hear about the job market is ever growing, changing, expanding, reinventing job market. What words or recommendations would you give to people seeking a new opportunity? And similarly, what characteristics and words would you give to organizations who are looking to grow their leadership team and seek dynamic leaders? What should they be looking for? What words would you share with them?
Going back to finding solutions, you know, put smart people in the room and they'll fix anything. Smart people, you know, seek smart people, talk with your candidates, learn more about them. They may not be, if I was running a culinary institution or a hospitality, I'm very open to those who didn't come from this profession, from that profession or that craft. But are they smart? Are they smart in the areas that they do come from? You know, and do they bring fresh perspectives? Looking for the thing that doesn't appear to be an exact fit. And looking for those who seem to have emotional intelligence, more emotional intelligence. Spend more time in the emotional intelligence space. That's, It's not a soft skill. You see that, you read that in publications. You know, emotional intelligence is a soft skill. It, no, it's the hard skill. It is the first skill, is the number one skill. Everything else, we can train you and we can work with you. But knowing yourself and knowing the room, you know, and all those types of things, spending time on the emotional intelligence or seeking folks who seem to have a good handle on that will go a long way.
Sure. Wonderful.
Great. Well, look, let me just thank you, because I know you're very busy with the multiple hats that you wear here in the National Capital Region and internationally in the work that you do in the service. So thank you for your service and thank you for spending some time with us today.
It's been great. I've enjoyed this. Thanks for giving me some time to just kind of download on some thoughts and ideas. I really have had a great time.
And thank you all for spending some time with us listening to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt.
You've been listening to Kenyatta's Talent Hunt with our host, Kenyatta Uzel, founder and CEO of PolyHire. We'll see you next time on Kenyatta's Talent Hunt.